Hello, my friends. This is Dr. Beter. Today is April 28, 1978, and this is my audio letter number 33. On a summer day in 1971, two men in spacesuits sat aboard an awkward-looking four-wheeled vehicle that was making its way across the surface of the Moon. American astronauts David Scott and James Irwin, the lunar landing crew of Apollo 15, were on their way to get a close look at the gigantic lunar canyon known as Hadley Rill. They were the first men in history to go for a ride on the lunar surface. As they bumped along, they passed the rim of a crater which they named Earthlight Crater. Mission Control in Houston radioed back, quote, "Arthur Clark would be proud of you," unquote. 16 years earlier, in 1955, the renowned British writer Arthur C. Clarke had published a prophetic book with the title Earthlight. Published 2 years before the space age dawned with Sputnik 1, Earthlight was about man's then-future occupation of the Moon. And in honor of Clarke's vision, the Apollo 15 astronauts named Earthlight Crater after the book. And very often during television coverage of the American visits to the Moon, Walter Cronkite of CBS News had at his elbow none other than Arthur C. Clarke. In his book, Clarke painted a vivid picture of the great value the Moon would acquire, scientifically, economically, and strategically. The climax of this book, honored so uniquely by the Apollo 15 astronauts, is called the Battle of Pico, a hypothetical space battle centered on the Moon. And while the details are quite different, Clarke's fictional Battle of Pico foreshadowed in eerie ways the real space battle that took place more than two decades later in September 1977. The Battle of the Harvest Moon has been kept a secret from the public, both by the victor, the Soviet Union, and by the vanquished, the United States of America. But it is the key to understanding the increasingly headlong retreat of the United States on all fronts under the new boldness of the Kremlin. Like September 1977, April 1978 has been a watershed month in the needless decline and fall of the United States and of the Western world. Now, as last September, crucial developments have taken place under the shroud of secrecy with no official hint of what is actually taking place. Now as then, the only public clues to the momentous developments going on behind the scenes are obscure diplomatic maneuvers and mysterious occurrences of all kinds. Last September, for example, there was the mystery of the so-called UFO over Petrozavodsk in the Soviet Union. Then a scant week later, there was the loudly trumpeted breakthrough in SALT II negotiations. This breakthrough, we were told, accounted for the highly unusual sudden nighttime meeting with Jimmy Carter at the White House, demanded by Soviet Foreign Minister Andrei Gromyko. As I told you that month in AUDIO LETTER 26, the object over Petrozavodsk was not a UFO, and the major media stories about a SALT breakthrough were lies to mislead the public. And today, 7 months later, there still is no SALT II agreement. This month, there is the alleged mystery of the Korean airliner that intruded in the Soviet airspace while Secretary of State Vance was in Moscow to discuss arms limitations. The talks took place against a background of clear Soviet threats that this was to be America's last chance to conclude a SALT II treaty. The talks ended as deadlocked as ever, but suddenly the Soviet stance in public is the embodiment of sweet reason and patience. Meanwhile, Secretary Vance refuses to tell the public anything about what went on in Moscow. Today, the Republic of the United States of America is in the twilight of final decline, prior to nuclear war. Our secret rulers behind the scenes are still trying to salvage what they can from their ruined plan for world conquest, and in the process are making our situation even more desperate day by day. They are manipulating our economy and our politics to their own ends. They still believe that their wealth will save them from the nuclear nightmare that they are bringing upon the rest of us, and they are stalling for time, hoping to obtain the fruits of crash projects and military development in time to stave off the crushing military might of the Soviet Union. Since the Battle of the Harvest Moon 7 months ago, ideology is rapidly being cast aside as a determining factor for the actions of governments. As the world drifts closer to war, it's increasingly every nation for itself in the arena of world affairs. Historical patterns and alignments are pushing aside ideological arguments, and the survival instinct is taking the place of treaties and even of long-standing friendships between nations. The shabby treatment of America's allies by our secret rulers over the years is now coming home to roost. Even now, as we are being backed into a corner, our rulers are continuing to throw chunks of meat to the advancing Russian bear to buy a few moments of time. As our rulers throw away a weapon here, an ally there, the Russian bear pauses for a moment to digest each game, and then presses ever closer. And as we are backed into the position of Fortress America, we are increasingly a fortress without weapons and without the spirit to survive. Like France before May 10, 1940, we hear daily assurances of our military strength and the dependability of our untried defenses. But like France in 1940, we are eaten up within by spies, inaction, and apathy. My friends, there are those who say I should not tell you the whole truth about behind-the-scenes events that are determining your fate, because, they say, I am frightening the people. But consider these words of a famous German psychiatrist, quote, "Fear can be disruptive, leading to panic, immobility, an abdication of rationality in favor of blind emotion. It can also be constructive, creative in the search for ways of escape, sharpening the wits in order to avoid or overcome danger. One of the difficulties is that so many of us are too apathetic to be afraid, either trusting to fate to extricate us or shrugging our shoulders at the prospect of what will be," unquote. When nuclear war comes, including geophysical warfare, only those who have been forewarned will have any chance of avoiding the panic that will seize those who are taken by surprise. Only total exposure can prevent nationwide panic. The American people will bow to a dictatorial government as our republic collapses in flames, and only total exposure plus a spiritual reawakening could possibly turn aside the man-made catastrophe that is in store for all of us. My three special topics for today are topic number 1, inflation, gold, and the stock market bear trap. Topic number 2, Korean Airlines Flight 902, the Flying Lusitania. And topic number 3, the twilight of the United States Republic. Topic number 1. For several years now, the stock market has been following a long-term trend downward, crashing in slow motion. But just 2 weeks ago, on April 14, 1978, the stock market in New York suddenly jumped out of the doldrums as if on signal. Without plausible explanation, trading volume soared to astronomical levels, setting all-time records while the Dow Jones averages raced upward steadily. Meanwhile, government economic statistics were sold to the public as showing that our economy was picking up, and even the badly slumping United States dollar appeared to be gaining a new lease on life, thanks to rumors that the United States government was about to start auctioning off gold to prop up the dollar. But as every housewife knows, inflation is advancing steadily, eating up the family budget and making it even harder to make ends meet. And while the government drones on and on about inflation of a few percent per year, shoppers find prices on practically everything today leaping upward week by week. It's enough to make one think the government and the stock market are in a dream world of their own. And my friends, they are. We still hear monthly about America's balance of payments deficit, even though it has become an obsolete measurement. As I explained 5 years ago in my book, The Conspiracy Against the Dollar, the traditional balance of payments measurement has been outmoded by multinational corporations, most of them owned and controlled by our secret rulers. Over 200 of the mightiest of these, together with their multinational banks, form the economic empire of the Rockefeller cartel. Multinationals push money and goods around among themselves however they please, and as these dollars cross national borders, they cause a nation's balance of payments to reflect whatever they choose. For example, foreign affiliates of American multinational corporations send oil from abroad to America and are paid in dollars that contribute to a so-called negative balance of payments for the United States, even though the companies involved are effectively Rockefeller-controlled on all sides of the transactions. Today, the greatest single export by American multinational companies is jobs. The economic manipulations that have helped to solidify Rockefeller control over the United States have also forced costs in the United States to soar compared to other countries. So increasingly, the multinationals buy labor in cheaper markets overseas that used to account for jobs in America. The result is a steadily rising hard core of unemployed who can no longer find jobs. This process has turned the United States increasingly into a service-oriented economy, while our basic industries have declined. There was a time not so long ago when the words "Made in USA" were stamped on many of the products that dominated world markets, but no more. Today, in many cases, only the name is American. The product itself is European or Japanese or Mexican or otherwise foreign-made. Now, this process has gone so far that even the American lead in aerospace is fast disappearing. As major new generations of commercial aircraft are being considered for the world's airline fleets, lately the competition is being won by European manufacturers, not American. Until recently, aircraft exports have long been the single major bright spot in America's increasingly dismal export picture. Now that, too, is slipping from our grasp. As we Americans look around us today, we are unconsciously seeing a hollow shell of what used to be. Like a perfectly painted timber of wood eaten up inside by termites, it still looks impressive, but the real strength is gone. Much of the technological and economic power that used to be America's now resides abroad, in Europe, in Japan, and in the Soviet Union. The process of milking the United States economically and technologically strengthened in 1961. It was part of the two-pronged grand plan for world conquest that was set in motion in 1961 by our secret rulers, the four Rockefeller brothers and their associates. As I've explained in detail in earlier tapes, one prong of this plan was visible in its effects, involving the gradual weakening of the United States to the point of military vulnerability. This was to culminate in a carefully programmed nuclear war between the Soviet Union and the United States, primarily on American soil. But then, after the American people had been beaten down to such an extent that we would accept complete dictatorship under Rockefeller control, the second prong of the plan was to be put into effect, that is, a double cross of the Soviet Union by their secret allies, the Rockefellers. using super-secret weapons developed since 1961. The plan was to utterly destroy the Soviet Union as the climax of the war, and the Rockefellers would have emerged as the undisputed masters of the entire world. This grand plan came to ruin 7 months ago in the disastrous space battle of the Harvest Moon, but the bitter fruits of this diabolical plan are still with us. In order to be in a position to profit from nuclear war on the soil of the United States, the Rockefellers transferred the bulk of their assets ahead of time to areas where they would not be touched by nuclear war I. This included multinational affiliates in Europe and Latin America, as well as to the tightly controlled Rockefeller corporate empire in Japan. It also included massive transfers of American money, technology, and military secrets to the Soviet Union to cement the Rockefeller-Soviet alliance until the day of Double Cross. The plan also included the spiriting away of the huge monetary gold hoard of the United States. In the magic year of 1961, when the entire grand plan was getting underway, the monetary aspect of the plan got underway in the form of the London Gold Pool Agreement. Under the cloak of this authority, America's gold flowed out of the United States in a continuing hemorrhage from 1961 to 1968, when the gold pool was ended. The ending of the London Gold Pool Agreement on March 17, 1968 was followed the very next day by the signing of Public Law 90-269 by President Lyndon Johnson. With the stroke of a pen, the requirement that the United States dollar be backed by gold was eliminated. And on August 15, 1971, President Richard Nixon closed the gold window, declaring by executive order that the United States would no longer redeem dollars with gold, even in international monetary transactions. It was a declaration of war on the dollar, and since then, American inflation and sinking dollar values have gone hand in hand. According to official United States Treasury figures, the United States still retains the world's largest monetary gold hoard, some 277 million ounces. But 4 years ago this month, in April 1974, I testified before Congress to the fact that the Treasury figures are falsified and that the United States is in fact gold poor. Based on very solid intelligence information, I described the secret removal of vast quantities of gold from the bullion depository at Fort Knox for transferal to powerful private interests. I stood ready to present my evidence and witnesses under oath before a federal grand jury or congressional investigation with subpoena power. But there was no investigation. So I made my charges public by every available means, offering to go to jail as a rabble-rouser if I could not prove my charges in a proper legal form. But still, no honest investigation of any kind materialized. Instead, worried by mounting public pressure, the Treasury arranged a public relations peep show at Fort Knox. There, invited congressmen and newsmen were shown stacks of strangely reddish bars of alleged gold in just one small compartment. This was followed by a so-called gold audit which, when it was finally released after months of delay, said only, quote-unquote, "We believe that the gold is there." The United States Treasury Department has been aware for some time that something would have to be done about the resurgence of concern about Fort Knox. So during 1977, about 1.5 million ounces of gold were obtained from Portugal. This plus other assorted reserves of mostly junk gold that have been scraped together brings America's true gold stock right now to just over 3.5 million ounces. This is a mere pittance compared with the 277 million ounces on official Treasury books, but it does provide something to use for psychological gold sales once again. Earlier this month, the Treasury made a big deal of announcing that the United States will hold 6 monthly auctions of gold, amounting to 300,000 ounces each. At this rate, if the United States really had the claimed stocks of gold, Auctions could be held monthly for 77 years, yet the Treasury offers to do so only for 6 months as a psychological ploy. Several years ago, the Rockefellers and their associates began the process of bailing out in preparation for war. Now, using their control of certain key financial institutions here and abroad, they have suddenly created an artificial stock market run-up, known in some circles as a bear trap. The idea is to have these controlled holders of large blocks of stock begin trading among themselves in a frenzy back and forth, raising prices and generating tremendous stock market trading volume in the process. Soon, unsuspecting outside investors, the so-called bears who have been leery of the sick stock market, are drawn into the fray to invest in what looks like a bull market. This situation may continue for some time, but when the smoke clears, the big controlled investors who created the artificial bull market will have cut their bloated portfolios, and the normally bearish outside investors who have bought their stocks at inflated prices will be left holding the bag. Without the artificial pressures now being applied, the stock market will once again begin sinking, and the bears who have been sucked into the stock market whirlpool will be trapped. The stock market bear trap now in progress is bad enough, but there is a far worse bear trap that is now closing around our secret rulers as well as the rest of us, and that is the war trap of the Russian bear. Topic number 2. On May 7, 1915, the passenger liner Lusitania was nearing the end of its journey from the United States to Great Britain. The Great War was underway, and for nearly 3 months a German submarine blockade of Britain had been in effect. But the nearly 2,000 passengers aboard the ship were not expecting trouble because, after all, the Lusitania was a passenger vessel. Suddenly, without warning, torpedoes struck the Lusitania. She was under attack from a German submarine. Soon the Lusitania sank and nearly 1,200 lives were lost. Only later did it come out that the Lusitania had been carrying large quantities of vital war material below decks, war material that was subject to the announced blockade by Germany. The attempt had been made to sneak this war cargo through the blockade by using nearly 2,000 unsuspecting passengers as a protective shield against attack. But the attempt had failed, with tragic consequences. This month, on April 20, 1978, a modern-day parallel to the Lusitania incident took place when a Korean Airlines Boeing 707 penetrated Soviet airspace and finally was shot down. As with the Lusitania, Korean Airlines Flight 902 was carrying out a military mission, using the lives of unsuspecting passengers as a protective shield against attack. But this time the mission was not the delivery of war material, but the gathering of intelligence. Korean Airlines Flight 902 was 39 minutes late taking off from Paris that day due to an unexplained delay. Then the 707 took off into the afternoon sun, heading northwest over the Norwegian Sea on its Arctic route to Anchorage, Alaska. Periodically the pilot checked in with ground stations, and as long as the 707 was within tracking range of radar, it was right on course. After passing over northern Greenland, Flight 902 passed out of the range of ground radar installations. Later the pilot reported that he was approaching Ellesmere Island in extreme northern Canada, but in fact he had put his plane into a slow, sweeping U-turn to the right, flying a course towards an unannounced destination, the Soviet Union. And the final position report to northern Canada, given while the jet was still outside radar tracking range, served to prevent anyone from guessing what was afoot. The Korean 707 raced into Soviet airspace from the north and passed directly over the mammoth submarine base at Murmansk, the headquarters of the Soviet Northern Fleet. There is no naval site in the entire Soviet Union that is more secret or sensitive than Murmansk. As two Sukhoi 15 jet fighters were scrambled to intercept the 707, it continued southeastward across the Kola Peninsula, which is dotted with military installations, and like Murmansk, highly sensitive. The 707 forged ahead on his pre-planned flight route without regard for the fighters. It did not slow down, turn on landing lights, or do anything else to respond to the Soviet fighters, one of which flew alongside, the other trailing behind the 707. After passing almost completely across the Kola Peninsula, Flight 902 was about to head across the narrow White Sea to pass over the port of Archangel, and not far beyond it, the super-secret Plesetsk Cosmodrome. At that point, Moscow ordered the fighters to force the 707 down by damaging it, but not to destroy it. The fighter that had been alongside dropped back and away, and the other opened fire, taking care not to destroy control surfaces or ignite the fuel tanks. Gunfire from the fighter tore holes in the fuselage, killing one passenger outright, fatally wounding another, and injuring perhaps a dozen more. Cabin pressure began dropping fast, and now the 707 was forced to dive to lower altitudes very rapidly. Within 5 minutes, the 707 had dropped to only 3,000 feet, where it flew around for another hour and a half before landing finally in a wide, clear area far from any airport. Throughout the time that the Korean 707 was flying through Russian skies, special instruments installed on the plane were generating reconnaissance data. The data, together with the cockpit conversation, were transmitted in coded form to CIA receivers just beyond the Soviet border. This is why National Security Advisor Brzezinski was able so quickly to announce that Soviet fighters had fired on the Korean 707. As an intelligence mission, Korean Airlines Flight 902 was a success, but when you hear why it was necessary, you will begin to understand just how desperate America's military situation has become.